Welcome to Great Moments in Presidential History. If Donald J. Trump had been President Edition, the Space Shuttle Challenger tragedy.
Unbelievable. This is a terrible waste of life, believe me. But I've often said, government can't make anything right. I say that all the time. I don't know why they were getting on a ship built by the government, really. Why were we going to space anyway? It didn't even have any weapons. There was no money in it.
The Oklahoma City Federal Building bombing.
This is a terrible thing, believe me. But I've said for a long time, government is too big. And terrible bombing, but there are good people on both sides here.
9/11.
Unbelievable. Who makes buildings like this anyway? This would never happen in a Trump building. And why didn't the firefighters get them out quicker? Because they're part of a union. Unions, bad. I've spoken to Osama bin Laden. He says he didn't do it. I don't know why he would lie about such a thing.
It's time for Forward Nation Radio.
I meant to say wouldn't lie.
Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to the pre-election, or will we have a country next week edition of Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thank you for joining us. In a week in which Donald Trump actually does something right, along with Great Britain calling for the ceasefire in our proxy war in Yemen. We are reminded again that if Donald Trump had been president when World War II broke out, the United States would have gone in on the wrong side. Let's start our discussions pre-election this week with the aftermath of the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting that left 11 dead. The deadliest shooting, the deadliest attack against Jews in the United States ever. Indicative of hate crimes being on the rise, anti-Semitism being on the rise, up 57% in 2017, the most ever, as both an increase and in absolute numbers, in the first year of Donald Trump. Wonder if there's a coincidence there. We won't wonder about it for long. So the empathizer-in-chief went down to Pittsburgh this week to console the relatives of the victims and the community. Well, he did that after tweeting that Jews should have had guns, and that could have prevented the violence. Yes, blame the victims, in this case, for having a lack of guns. And, of course, he went down right after attending a campaign rally, at which he stoked up his base. Well, turns out the provocateur-in-chief was not particularly welcome down in Pittsburgh. Who could have seen that one coming? Not welcomed by the local community, not welcomed by politicians, not welcomed by the mayor of Pittsburgh. Uh-oh, looks like Pittsburgh is going to have to see some tax increases. Oh, looks like Trump may have found a job for Chris Christie, finally. You know, this would be a joke if it weren't for the fact that one could expect that this president of the United States will, of course, seek to punish his opposition, those who oppose him in any way, shape, or form. Well, turns out that after the attack on the Tree of Life, we had some people weighing in on Donald Trump and what he has contributed to our national conversation situation. The rabbi and founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center told the New York Times, "I'm afraid to say that we may be at the beginning of what has happened to Europe, the consistent anti-Semitic attacks. If it is not nipped in the bud," he said in a remark that should make every American pause and think, "I am afraid the worst is yet to come." Abe Foxman, the former longtime head of the Anti-Defamation League, talked about Trump's role emboldening hate, saying that Trump may not be an anti-Semite, but he has emboldened the anti-Semites and the other bigots to come out of the closet. Who could be supporting this? Who could be supporting a president who provokes, antagonizes, and brings out the bigotry and the anti-Semitism and all? Well, in another example of life being stranger than fiction, Donald Trump's only big support seems to be coming from, wait for it, the nation of Israel. That's right, Israel's right-wing government that shares so much right now in common with Donald Trump. The dividing people, the bigotry, the basic lack of accountability, the right-wingism. Turns out is Donald Trump's only real support in this case, having sent a couple of prominent figures to Pittsburgh to have Donald Trump's back. Yes, when the state of Israel is the lone ally, other than the anti-Semites, of the person who is promoting anti-Semitism, politics makes for strange bedfellows indeed. Why else might Donald Trump not have been welcomed? Well, it's come out this week that the shooter actually cited the caravan in his preparations and his justifications for the shooting. That's right, the caravan of migrants that has been talked about so much by our president, and I don't know, who else has been referring to the caravan? Let's say, oh, right, Fox News and Fox Business News apparently have referred to it as an invasion 135 times in October alone. According, apparently, to the count, I believe that was Nick Kristof's count. Trump, of course, as we noted last week, has been sending 5,200 troops to the border. Also courtesy of Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times. He may be sending thousands more, he's been promising. But in any event, what he has already promised and is sending can be estimated to cost modestly $35 million. Or a lot more than that. As Kristof notes, that's enough money to get about 1,600 Americans off of opioids. So we are really seeing where our priorities lie in this country. Not on making Americans better, but on stoking up their anger and turning them to hate. The Centers for Disease Control, by the way, came out this week and undermined the President of the United States and his official spokespersons, Fox News, by pointing out that the migrants in the caravan presumably have no disease. And in fact, most of them come from a country, that Honduras, that has a much better record of vaccinating its citizens, its young ones, than the United States has. Does that stop at least one contributor to Fox News from citing, and I hope you didn't miss this one, this was precious. One of the contributors to Fox News cited the fact that people in the caravan were bringing in smallpox. Yes, smallpox. A disease which has been eradicated for 40 years. Trump continues to go about energizing his base with hate. I don't understand why the victims in Pittsburgh would not want that person coming here to console them. But in the meantime that Trump and the Republican Party are energizing their base, we again see the contrast and again see the false equivalencies from those who argue both sides. Former President Obama has been out on the campaign trail, finally making himself visible, opposing Trump and trying to get Democrats elected across the country. What is Obama's platform in his speeches? The typical Obama platform of idealism and hope and working together for a better country. One of the most touching, I think, stories to come out of the Pittsburgh shooting is the fact that the gunman was treated by Jewish doctors. You know, it's wonderful that we keep pointing out how much better one side is than the other. How much more ethical, how much more moral, how much more decent. The problem is, we keep seeing every time this happens, that in a country that is this ignorant, nice guys really do finish last. That nice guys can't win in a country this ignorant, and the Republicans will continue to salivate at watching the Democrats take the high road while they continue to take the apparently much more successful low road. It's not, of course, just anti-Semitic violence that's been on the rise. As we've been reminded again over the past couple of weeks, anti-Black violence has been on the rise in America as well. It was last week where some jackass killed two black people in a grocery store because he couldn't get into a black church to do more damage and presumably emulate one of his idols. But this week, in fact, we saw the racist telephone calls in Georgia and Florida against Democratic gubernatorial candidates Stacey Abrams and Andrew Gillum, respectively. Blatantly racist phone calls going out to voters in Georgia and North Carolina. To his credit, Brian Kemp, the opponent of Stacey Abrams in Georgia, disavowed those phone calls. The problem is, of course, that Brian Kemp, as we discussed just last week, has been in the news as Secretary of State of Georgia by disenfranchising people and preventing them from voting so that he could get elected governor. Guess which people he's been disenfranchising? Yes, blacks and brown-skinned people. So you could say all you want that you don't like this blatant anti-Semitism, but clearly what you do like is the old Republican tactic of dog whistles. In other words, what Kemp objects to is the blatancy of these phone calls, how obvious they are. They're supposed to be more subtle than that. Andrew Gillum had the line of the month of the political campaign season in his debate against the Trump acolyte Ron DeSantis in Florida, when Gillum so notably pointed out, "I'm not saying that you are a racist and a white supremacist. What I'm saying is the racists and the white supremacists obviously think you're one of them." That wasn't a quote. It was my statement of what he said, my reenactment. It is important to point out in Kemp's defense that he says that, or he would say, that he does not want to disenfranchise these people because they're black. He wants to disenfranchise them because they're Democrats and they're likely to vote for the other side. I know that sounds crazy. Why would he say such a thing? And he won't actually say it out loud until it comes time the case gets to the United States Supreme Court. Because, as we've pointed out on this show before, the United States Supreme Court has actually said that that's okay. That distinction is really important. If you disenfranchise voters because they're black, that violates the Constitution. But if you disenfranchise them because they're liable to vote for your opponent, well, that's perfectly okay, according to the United States Supreme Court. But don't worry, because that ridiculous distinction is probably going to go out the window pretty soon, because now we have a new Supreme Court of five ultra-right-wingers. And so we can expect that distinction to go away, not because it turns out that disenfranchising all voters is a bad thing, but probably because disenfranchising all voters is perfectly acceptable under the Constitution. Yes, seeing racism on the rise makes us think again of Steve King, Republican congressman of Iowa, and someone who can be counted on every few months to make some blatantly racist statement. Well, Steve King may have gone a little bit too far this week in his blatant racism and in supporting white supremacists. Yes, causing several businesses in Iowa, like Land O'Lakes, to withdraw their support from Steve King, stating that he no longer represents their values. Really? No longer represents their values? He represented your values before? When he was I won't even say slightly less obvious racist. He was always this obvious racist. I guess the only difference is people are now focusing on it. So that's right, the butter company finally has a problem with their congressman being a little bit too white. Also this week, we were introduced to Gab, one of many social media apps for white nationals. Yes, it's in the news first among many because, of course, it was one of the favorite sites of the gunman, and it was cited by the gunman in Pittsburgh, who couldn't sit by and watch his people get slaughtered, as he pointed out. Gee, where would he come up with the idea that his people were getting slaughtered? Oh yes, of course, right-wing social media sites, and right-wing radio, and right-wing TV, and maybe even the President of the United States, who, remember, when white supremacists were chanting, "Jews will not replace us, Jews will not replace us," thought it important to point out that there were good people on both sides. Last week on this show, we asked if we thought if anybody thought the FBI was monitoring the right-wing white supremacists who were the cause of so much terrorism of late, as they would have been if they were a Muslim group. Of course, we were asking this facetiously because the answer, even at that time, was obvious. Well, it turns out during this week, we've gotten some more support showing just how obvious it was that the FBI thinks of terrorists as something that only Muslims do. Yes, it turns out President Trump revised the U.S. government protocol for combating violent extremism. That's right, he has funded only programs addressing, quote, radical Islamic fundamentalism, close quote, and canceled funding for those fighting white nationalism. Though it turns out over the last decade, 26% of politically motivated murders in the United States were committed by Islamic extremists, 71% by right-wing extremists. Well, a big New York Times report came out this week, again confirming what we already knew, that the U.S. has been ignoring white right-wing terror for basically ever. And in fact, in a really scary report that you do not want to miss, it's pointed out that the FBI and the Homeland Security and agencies that are supposed to protect our security have admitted that they have absolutely lost control of white supremacist right-wing violence. It has grown so large through their neglect while they were focused on Muslims that we question whether we can get it under control. There's a happy thought to start your week. Why would we do this? Why would we ignore the number one threat to America on the terrorism front? And this isn't just new. We have more reports on this, but this has been known for years that the United States has been ignoring right-wing terrorism. I'll give you a moment, but of course the answer for any of our regular listeners is obvious. Because this is the Republican Party base. These are the people that the Republican Party needs in order to win elections. These are Trump people. I've stated several times since I've started doing this show that I would try to stop calling Trump supporters effing morons. Because, after all, we on the left try to aim higher. It's become more clear than ever. Every day that passes, it becomes clearer and clearer that when I refer to Trump supporters as effing morons, I'm actually doing them a favor. Because the alternative, if they're not effing morons, they are evil scum, for most of us is even worse. But anyway, while all this is going on and while these reports are coming out illustrating how large the threat of white male right-wing terrorism is, Fox News is still on the case, telling Americans how tough it is to be a white Christian male in America. Yes, that's the story from the right, how difficult it is to be white in America. It is remarkable that people in Pittsburgh, victims of this kind of despicable violence, would not want President of the United States, Donald Trump, to come down and talk to them. All of this is a real reminder of what this election in just a couple of days is all about. First of all, are we really a nation of fear and a nation of bigots? Is immigration really the greatest threat to this country? A threat to our very lives and well-beings? Do we accept the rights of minorities and disadvantaged people in this country? Or are we a nation of such fear and such bigotry that we circle the wagons and spew our hate from our encirclement? This election is also about whether truth and journalism have any place in America. During the week, we found out a lot more about the plot against Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Apparently, a conservative lobbyist and radio host, maybe a couple, in fact, seem at this early juncture to be involved in a plot to try to pay women to make false charges against Robert Mueller, false charges of sexual assault. Because after all, there's nothing about the right more than they sure are derivative of everything the left manages. Is it believable that scumbags on the right could have done this? Is that a joke? They lie about murder? They lie about child sex trafficking? They lie about everything. Why wouldn't they lie about this? Turns out the right-wing media will just lie about everything. And then we'll support each other's lies through media coverage of each other's lies. Just keep spreading the lies. You wonder, and I've said on this show a lot, that maybe the one thing the left still has going for it is just how apparently stupid and incompetent the right often is. You say, how do they think that they can get away with this? How do they think that they won't be caught at this? Well, they probably do think it. But the fact is, it's a win for them either way. Because even if they get caught in their lie, it tends to blunt the argument from the other side about all the sexual harassment, assault, misogyny, protecting the rights of women. They'll just expect the media to go to the usual false equivalency. Well, they lie, these guys lie, everybody lies. So the next time someone brings up sexual assault allegations against a right-wing son of a bitch Supreme Court justice, well, you know, we've already seen how everybody lies about this kind of stuff. So it's a win-win for the right. Even if they get caught in their lies, they win. And once again, we see both-sidism, as Paul Krugman referred to it this week, or false equivalency. Lack of ethics or integrity? We're only seeing it from one side. Lack of concern for the country? Willingness to actually destroy the country in a naked quest for more and more power? That only comes from one side. The Democrats always try to unify, always try to tamp down the rhetoric when they get power. Which is why, when the Republicans take power, this country jumps off a cliff. When the Democrats take power, I don't know how to make this metaphor work, actually, but they try to hold things. They say, gee, right now things aren't so bad because we haven't hit bottom yet. We just make the cliff a little deeper. I know I'm stretching here. We just make the cliff a little bit deeper until the Republicans take over again and resume our descent. There's an old legal adage, an old adage in the law. When the law is on your side, you argue the law. When the law is against you, but the facts are on your side, you argue the facts. When the law and the facts are both against you, you pound on the table and scream bloody murder. This now is basically the way the Republicans run things in America. They have no law on their side. They have no facts on their side. So they scream loudly, they pound on the table, they yell, they talk about how awful everybody is and how unfair everything is. All, of course, at the same time that they're loading our court system with people to make sure that the law will be on their side at some point in the future. At this point, you look at what's going on in this country. You look at the voter suppression. You look at the rise in hate. You look at Republican divisiveness. You look at their willingness to cement their political power by destroying this country and ruining the lives of millions of people here and billions of people if you count around the globe. Talking about you, climate change, among other things. Running for political office? Brian Kemp shouldn't be running for governor. He should be running for head of the prison laundry. It is becoming, again, increasingly clear that basically, the entire Republican Party establishment should be behind bars, not elected to leadership. Speaking of elected, also on the ballot this month, this year, the very right to vote. Republicans who have been destroying the Voting Rights Act and as part of their lies to get elected, now saying that their effort to disenfranchise Americans is their way of trying to support the Voting Rights Act. No, seriously, they're actually saying that. The party that has been practicing voter suppression, blatantly throwing people off the voting rolls, simply because of the color of their skin and the likelihood that they will vote for the opposite side. Yes, and good news this week that you probably missed. A federal district court judge ruled against Brian Kemp's efforts in Georgia to require that all voters, to strike from the voting rolls, all voters whose names on the voting rolls do not constitute an exact match with their other IDs. In other words, an accent is out of place, a hyphen is out of place, or as has been pointed out, someone like me and probably you would be subject to being disenfranchised if, let's say, our driver's license says David A. Leventhal and our passport says David Andrew Leventhal. Yes, it turns out that's the kind of thing that would get you disenfranchised in Georgia. Well, not really, because I'm white, so they're not going after people like me. But it turns out a federal district court judge has ruled against the effort to do this. Why? Because it is nothing but a blatant attempt at disenfranchisement. Any argument for why they would need to do this to protect against voting fraud is so ridiculous on its face that the federal judge dismissed it. Well, what this means is that the Republicans have not yet been able to completely fill our judiciary with right-wing apparatchiks. At some point, given enough time, cases like this will eventually make their way to the United States Supreme Court. And if you don't know how the United States Supreme Court is going to rule, you haven't been paying attention to Forward Nation Radio over the last few weeks. Now, this week, we're finding out even more, however, with all the problems that we have in voting, like suppression. We also have a real problem with the accuracy of our voting counts. That's right. It turns out, as we've talked about endlessly on this show, but think just recently a 10-year-old boy, apparently, or an 11-year-old boy, was able to hack in and change the results of a sample voting machine in about 10 minutes. That's how likely to be accurate our voting results are. People talk about the fear that a foreign country, talking about you, Russia, could actually flip our vote totals. Foreign country? What are they thinking? The Republicans will be flipping our vote totals. In fact, as we look to question the accuracy of the votes in 2 days, we once again have reason to look back and say, why do we assume that the vote in 2016 was accurate? It turns out just a few thousand votes in a few different states swung the election to Donald Trump. How do we know that Donald Trump even won the Electoral College? He gets thin-skinned enough when we tell him he didn't win the popular vote, which he didn't, by at least 3 million. But maybe he lost the popular vote by 5 million, and 2 million votes were changed. This is the United States of America in the year 2018. We can't get voting right? We have ATMs that manage to spit out receipts showing what I did. We can't figure out a way to make a voting machine that does the same thing? Of course, we can figure out a way to do it. But one political party in this country doesn't want to figure out a way to do it. So if the Republicans maintain their control of this government, you can bet that efforts to improve the accuracy, reliability, and ability of Americans to vote, it's not happening, people. We're moving even further away from the faux democracy we already have. And then, of course, we've got our laws. Our ability to enforce our basic laws at stake in this election. We've talked a lot about the whole idea of accountability for government. We will be finding out after this election whether there is any accountability for Donald Trump and his administration related to the Mueller investigation, or whether, depending on the results of this election, Donald Trump knows that he can just fire the special counsel, end all investigations into his criminality, and move on because his voters will support it. Remember, these from the people who supposedly wanted to drain the swamp? It's insane. Well, this week we found out some more about Ryan Zinke, the embattled head of our Interior Department, who is under an ethics investigation that it turns out was started by his own department, which referred his criminal behavior to the Department of Justice. His repeated acts of fraud. This Trump minion, who has been rolling back environmental regulations and has been doing the bidding of oil and fossil fuel companies, thus making him a favorite of the President of the United States. How could there be a lack of ethics there? I don't understand. This man has been rolling back environmental regulations to poison Americans so that rich businesses destroying the planet can get richer. He is in the pocket of big oil. How could someone like that possibly have a lack of ethics? That's ridiculous. The loot the planet agenda of the right is once again really obvious here. And the loot the planet agenda of the right will be completely unfettered if the Republicans are rewarded for their blatant criminality of the last 2 years and way beyond. Speaking of accountability for government, we also will lose accountability for business, whatever accountability is left. We've talked on this show about the concept of business ethics and the fact that that term is an oxymoron. That in the business world, there's no such thing as ethics. Businesses are supposed to be concerned about their own well-being and not about the interests of anybody else's well-being, including that of society. And what we will be doing if the Republicans remain in charge of our government is making sure that businesses with no ethics, no concern about anybody else, continues to determine how the United States of America will be run. Just this week, we learned some more about fraud at Goldman Sachs. Oh, say it ain't so. Fraud at one of our financial firms, one of our big banks? It's impossible. I wish I could do a Wallace Shawn impression. But then again, I wish I could do a Donald Trump impression, and that doesn't stop me doing that. Well, turns out that several members of Goldman Sachs were working with a criminal in Malaysia and basically looting and ripping off the government of Malaysia. In other words, the people of Malaysia, making themselves rich. Uh-oh, looks like we found our next Treasury Secretary. Only which of these tremendously qualified candidates can we possibly choose? In this country, it has become obvious that the Democratic Party is corrupted by business. But what is also obvious and often forgotten is that there is a vast gulf between the two parties. Democrats are corrupted by business, but sometimes try to do the right thing despite that corruption. Republicans, on the other hand, are completely owned by big business, are completely owned by people who have no ethics. Sound familiar? Sound like we're coming full circle? When we talk about our laws, of course, let's not forget that reproductive rights are partly on the ballot here, in much of the country and nationally. The right, perhaps, even to get birth control and have sex may be on the ballot. And in light of the Pittsburgh massacre, will any gun laws survive in this country? Cement the Republican majority in all aspects of our government, and you can bet that we will be seeing the last of gun laws. The House has been floating, as we've reported on this show several times, with passing a law that will require every state in America to show full faith and credit to the gun laws of every other state. Meaning, all the Republicans need to do is buy one state to make sure that it allows concealed weapons to children. Oh, we already have that. And New York City will have to allow concealed weapons throughout New York City. This is on the ballot. Obviously, healthcare is on the ballot. Republicans continue to lie about that one. Oh, we want to protect pre-existing conditions, while at the same time instituting lawsuits to destroy Obamacare and its provision requiring insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions. Republicans promised that they had a better healthcare plan than Obamacare. They promised that for 8 years under Barack Obama. And we saw in the first 2 years of the Trump administration how true that was when the Republicans demonstrated that they, in fact, had nothing and continue to have nothing. People say that Donald Trump should be running on his economic success, on how well the economy is doing in America. Sure, if one doesn't consider the whole concept of a post hoc fallacy, whereby someone takes credit for causing something that, in fact, they just happen to be around for. What is it particularly in Donald Trump's economic policies that has helped make America rich? Nothing. This is a continuation of the recovery from the recession and some Obama policies. What we will see is more for the rich. We will see continually exaggerated income inequality in this country if the Republicans maintain power. And in fact, we will be destroying our economic future. Because one thing that people with facts, with arguments, and with evidence have noted is that your economy does not succeed when all of the wealth is in very few hands and 99% of America doesn't have enough money to buy stuff. As noted up above, the economy is also about unregulated businesses ruining lives and destroying our economic future, poisoning our environment, poisoning our water, poisoning our air, making people sick. Because the future isn't something for businesses to worry about, just how much profits they have today. And once we funnel more and more money to the rich, basically end taxation for what few rich people are paying it today and what few businesses pay taxes today, well, then we could declare war on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, as Republicans have already floated. In other words, starve the beast in full mode. This election fundamentally is about, do we have a future in this country? It was remarkable. In one of my classes, students pointed out that Thomas Friedman's op-ed was basically, go vote Democratic, drive people to the polls to vote Democratic, go canvass for Democratic candidates. And I pointed out that the New York Times throughout my lifetime has had a policy against op-ed columnists taking sides in a political debate. Well, yet here Friedman was taking sides. There's no doubt in my mind that this is because the New York Times is waiving this rule because of how much is at stake in this election, whether this country has a future. Years ago, during the Bush administration, we were introduced to something that became known as the Rove strategy. Karl Rove, the Bush advisor, had said, contrary to what had always governed American politics, that instead of reaching out to the middle and trying to appeal to voters in the middle in order to win elections, that the Republican Party needed to just reach out and energize its base in order to win elections. Well, it turns out that Karl Rove's strategy is still being practiced and to a large extent is being vindicated. The problem is that that strategy has to be enlarged. As the Republican base gets crazier and crazier, stupider, more bigoted and more bigoted, it turns out to keep being a somewhat smaller, though scarily large, segment of the U.S. population. So part of the policy now, the last part of the Rove strategy, is not just appeal to your base, but to stop the other side from voting. Democrats will still run to unite this country, as we talked about, running on Obamacare, running on policy issues throughout the country, Barack Obama speaking about unity and coming together and doing the right thing. But that's what's clearly not going to rule this country if the Republicans win this election. Republicans are running on a platform of ripping this country apart. They are running only partly on a pro-sexual assault platform, as indicated by Brett Kavanaugh. Mostly they are running on a strategy of ripping this country apart and stealing everything and consolidating power by ending any semblance of democracy. And we will find out in a few days whether that strategy works. You know, Amazon has come out with a new season of The Man in the High Castle, which was billed as an alternative history. What would have happened if Germany had won World War II? Unfortunately, Man in the High Castle is increasingly looking like a vision of an increasingly dystopian U.S. future. Go out and vote, people. It's almost time. Put gas in your car and take your friends, your family members, people in your neighborhood to vote. Go canvass for Democratic candidates. This country is fighting for its life. We hope to see you next week. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.